Welcome to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my co-anchor, colleague, executive producer, Mary Gamba. Mary, how are we doing today?
I'm doing really great, Steve, as always, and good to see you this morning.
Absolutely. We're taping a series of interviews, healthcare, or leaders in healthcare, if you will, and we kick off with our good friend and colleague, Dr. Lisa Tang, who's president and chief hospital executive, Hackensack University Medical Center, part of the HMH Hackensack Meridian family. Lisa, good to see you, doctor.
Oh, good to see you too, Steve and Mary. How are you both?
We're doing well. Let me disclose that Dr. Tank and I have had a lot of offline conversations about leadership and communication. I've done a whole range, along with Mary, of coaching in, at HMH, Hackensack, Meridian Health, on leadership and communication. Lisa, let me ask you this. You were the chief medical officer. You're now the chief healthcare officer, right? A hospital executive, if you will, chief hospital executive. The biggest leadership change, tweak, whatever you want to call it, that you had to make from CMO to CHE, chief hospital executive. Please, Dr. Tank.
So, Steve, you're absolutely right. I was the chief medical officer for about 9 years before I transitioned into the president and the CHE role. And I think the one biggest nugget of wisdom that I see in that transition is truly crossing and integrating clinical and operational mindsets and thought processes. And with that comes the critical thinking. But I think the important piece is really making sure that how do those two lines intersect and we truly eliminate any silos, especially if there is a patient in that lane, irrespective of which lane you belong to, clinical or operational, it's just one lane and that's the patient lane.
Well said. By the way, our website's up right now. Go on our website, look at previous interviews we've done with Bob Garrett, the CEO of HMH, Mark Sparta, who is the chief operating officer as we speak. Lisa, he had your job at one point, right? And Mark, Bob, and I have talked a lot over the years about physicians who are physician leaders taking on executive roles within HMH. Easier said than done, but absolutely necessary. Mary, pick up wherever you're going with this. I know you're going somewhere good.
Oh, no, I'm always going somewhere good. Well, speaking of good, let's go.
Lisa, Mary and I do not coordinate our questions. We just listen to the conversation. Go ahead, Mary.
That's great.
I love listening to the conversation, and it's always so great to be here with you, Steve, and you, Dr. Tank. Wanted to talk a little bit about the Newsweek Top Hospital designation. It is huge. It is a big deal. So Hackensack University Medical Center was recently named one of Newsweek's top hospitals. What contributed to this? You were just talking about the growth that you've had as a professional at HUMC, but just curious, what do you believe goes into from everywhere from the greeter when you first walk into the hospital to the surgeon that's doing the surgery to the follow-up of the social workers? Talk a little bit about why that recognition is so important and how you got there.
So, Mary, thank you again. All these recognitions are such a great honor, and it's an honor and privilege to be part of that, part of the institution. And being a geriatrician and being one of the, I would say, a trainee at Hackensack University Medical Center, I started about 25 years ago. And what you just said, that Newsweek recognizing us or US News recognizing us as a top 20 honor roll hospital, the goal really, and it's the fundamental thing behind it, is the culture of it is our patient. All hands on deck, everybody is aligned, and everybody is really focused on how do we create a patient-centered experience that truly is met with compassion, empathy, focused on the patient, focused on the team, and really creating an environment of healing. I think that absolutely sums it up on what you see as one of the recognitions on the outcomes of that culture.
It's always interesting to me that awards recognition are the byproduct of a lot of hard work. It doesn't always happen, but people see the award, they see you're number one, and they go, oh, I wonder how that happened. A lot of stuff behind the scenes, let's just say that. Dr. Tech, let me follow up on the physician question. So Mary and I, our firm has been facilitating the HMH, Hackensack Meridian Health Leadership Academy, Physician Leadership Academy for years, trying to help physicians become the best leaders they can be. To what degree do you believe, particularly for clinicians who are in the operating room, mm-hmm. surgeons, Is there a certain, I know it's a weird question, but I've been thinking about it a lot. Is it a certain kind of leadership in the ER and OR versus leadership in the C-suite where you are now? Meaning, is leadership just leadership across the board, or does it depend upon the setting and the circumstance, Dr. Tank?
So I think as I talk to my team about leadership, leadership starts with each one of us. Each one of us has the opportunity to be a leader. The question becomes is how are you embracing it, right? So if you look at a physician in the emergency room, you look at a physician in the operating room, or you look at a physician truly outside the four walls of the hospital, right? I think the goal and the fundamental critical thinking is number one, you have to be a good physician for any thing to transpire or transition into a leadership mode. So if you are a good physician focused on patient care, delivering the highest quality and safety to your patient in a consistent, reliable way, and bringing true transformation and evidence to that patient, I think you are already on your journey to be a leader. Then the question comes up is how are you communicating? Because I truly believe that leadership is all about communication, irrespective of where you are taking care of that patient. So it could be a provider making a house call versus a provider in a nursing home. But if you have the ability to truly integrate horizontally and vertically, keeping that patient at the center, and what I always talk about, Steve and Mary, is the quadruple aim. Everything that we do in the world of medicine and delivering high quality care is always focused on the quadruple aim. What that means is truly the IHI that talks about it is making sure you have patient experience, you are managing population health, you're managing the costs in an efficient way, and you're delivering the highest quality of care.
That's the quadruple aim. And also make sure we put up a website so people can find out more about that. Mary, jump back in.
You talk about the quadruple aim, and you talked about that second one, which is really, getting the public health and the trust, right? So you mentioned public health as that second arm. Talk about trust in public health. How do you ensure, as a physician leader, that you're creating a culture? There's so much media out there, news to vaccinate, to not vaccinate, to go to the doctor, to do this, to do that. How do you get trust, not only from your team, but also in the patients that need to really be taking care of their own healthcare and well-being?
Dr.
So
Tank,
I
before you answer, let me complicate it. How do you build that trust, as Mary just said, while some of us go online to try to figure out and diagnose ourselves? Mary, you know what I'm talking about.
do.
Help us gain the trust while we're looking for information online.
It's truly a different environment right now about so much information coming to you. COVID taught us something about that, right? Like what is true information? What is true knowledge? And how do you not get distracted by what's coming to you out, online, on media, et cetera? So at Hackensack University Medical Center, and my philosophy is trust and transparency. We are not here. It's not a sprint. The goal is to build relationships. We want to empower our patients. We want to create a true doctor-patient relationship and a collaboration. It's not about a power distance where I'm telling my patient, this is how it's going to be, and that's the only way it's going to be. We are going to sit down. We are going to talk through what are your goals? What are your dreams? What are your expectations? As a geriatrician, if I see a patient who's 70 versus 80, the goal really is, where are you right now? How can I meet you there? And how do we now optimize and help you either age in a high quality manner where you preserve your quality of life, or we help you meet rest of your goals? So it's truly a conversation. It is a relationship building, and it is a partnership. And I think that is where the trust continues to build. Now, does all these recognitions build trust? Yes. Folks do look at these recognitions for being in the top 20 honor roll or being Leapfrog A or CMS 5 stars. What does that do? That truly also states all the reportable data that is publicly reported on quality, on safety, on processes.
And by the way, Leapfrog, they're an independent group who analyzes and recognizes who the top hospitals are. There are different grades. And also CMS is a federal entity. It's Medicaid, Medicare, right? The federal government also has to make these determinations because it has a lot to do with federal funding. Last question on this. I often talk about emotional intelligence, Dr. Daniel Goleman, and the connection between emotional intelligence, being self-aware, being a good listener, having empathy, and being a great leader. To what degree, Dr. Tank, I'll give you an easy question, which is not easy at all. To what degree is emotional intelligence innate versus learned and coached?
I think it has to be innate. I think innate, in a sense, as a physician, because we are also one of the provider or academic large flagship institution within HMH, Steve, you can teach and you can coach and you can practice, but I think it is very important for you to take a minute and self-reflect on where that emotional intelligence lies. Is it sometimes it's deeply buried and you haven't realized you have it and it just hasn't been nourished, and something you do when you do your coaching lessons is you bring it out, versus maybe you don't have it or you need to practice it. But honestly, I think if it is innate, it comes naturally. If it's not innate, you do have to work on it. And to be honest, there are times when it cannot be taught, to be very honest on that. And that differentiates leaders, that differentiates positions that certain people thrive and are successful in. So I think as leaders, our responsibility also is to put the right people in the right positions and to help them succeed.
To Dr. Tank's point, again, won't get on my soapbox, but go on our website right now. Mary and I did, Mary, there are many video seminars.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On emotional intelligence and leadership. Why? I appreciate what Dr. Tank is saying, that a lot of emotional intelligence is innate. One of the keys to emotional intelligence is to know and to be aware enough that you lack certain characteristics of emotional intelligence, being a really good listener, being empathetic, and deciding to work on it. So yes, it's innate, but the best emotionally intelligent leaders know what they don't know and work on it. I'm off my soapbox. That's it, Doc. That's Dr. Lisa Tank, who is the president and chief hospital executive, Hackensack University Medical Center, part of the HMH team. By the way, HMH has a thought leaders initiative we've been coaching in that includes Dr. Jose Azar. Check out our website for him, for Jose Lozano, right, and also Regina Foley, who is a great executive leader at HMH. They're all thought leaders, all leaders at HMH, together with Bob Garrett and Mark Sparta and others. Check out our website. Dr. Tank, we learned a lot from you as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Lessons in Leadership. We'll be right back.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
The North Ward Center has been the heart of NORC since 1970 by putting people, purpose, and mission first, nurturing our youth, uplifting families, and honoring our elders. We're more than a nonprofit. We're a driving force to advance equity, education, and opportunity. And Buddy approved.
Lessons in Leadership is back. We're talking to one of our longtime partners and friends at Seton Hall University, Dr. Alyssa McLeod, Senior Enrollment Strategist at the Seton Hall University. Good to see you, Doctor.
Good to see you as well.
Describe your role at the university.
So I take care of all of the big picture strategic enrollment matters, financial aid, leveraging, all of the strategies and policies around admissions, around financial aid. I also coach and mentor the vice president of enrollment management, and I actually served as vice president and executive vice president at the university for 14 years.
And again, Seton Hall University are a longtime partner in Lessons in Leadership, but also check out the Buccino Leadership Institute there, where we've had a longtime connection. I'm going to follow up with this, Alyssa. I do, as you know, I do a lot of leadership coaching, communication coaching, and older people who are in leadership and management positions often will say to me, well, Steve, you know how younger people are. They don't have as much grit. They want it right away. They're not willing to work. Is there all these generalizations? First of all, to what degree do you, because you've seen students come and go for a while, to what degree do you see any distinct difference, if at all, about most of the college students you see at the university and their willingness to get their hands dirty, work hard, and be engaged in GRIT, grit? Go ahead, Melissa.
I understand why some people say that, but I have to say my experience with students at Seton Hall has proved otherwise. There are a lot of students at the university who really show a lot of tenacity, a lot of perseverance. You know, resilience is one of the things that's important to us. Our founders, Elizabeth Ann Seton, really spoke to the spirit of resilience. And I think I see that in our students. You know, we have a lot of first generation students. We have a lot of students who are really using education as a tool and a means to finding their purpose and bettering their life. So fortunately, we see students who are really working hard, rolling up their sleeves, and being introspective and doing the hard work to succeed.
By the way, check out our website at steveadubato.org. It's our for the website for our media production company. We did a documentary, interviewed some people who did a documentary on Elizabeth Ann Seton, and there would be no Seton Hall University if not for Elizabeth Ann Seton. Check it out. Mary, please.
Dr. McLeod, I've heard a lot in the news recently. If you pick up a paper, it talks about how artificial intelligence is really being used even in the employment process. If you submit a resume, they say that the employer is taking a look through AI. How are you using artificial intelligence in enrollment services? In other words, as these students, if I were applying to Seton Hall University, does AI play a factor, or is it still, does it still have that human touch, or is it both?
We really don't use it very much in enrollment services, certainly not in the admissions process. That's still very human, interviewing students, reading essays, applications. We do have some chatbots that help students if they log on to our website and they want to ask a question and they don't want to give us a call. They can use a chatbot, but we actually prefer that they give us a call. We want to connect with them. We want to peel back the onion and know them a little bit more and have it be a two-way dialogue. But certainly there are lots of resources for people if they want to use a chatbot. But beyond that, we don't use AI very much in terms of the enrollment or admissions process. We do use it in the classroom a little bit more, but more to help students learn how to leverage it as an effective tool in their education.
Pick that up, Mary, because I often wondered, are students, do we all on some level, but students who are taking exams and competing to be the best students they can be, I often wonder, does AI, do students sometimes think that AI does the thinking for them?
Exactly. That's why I was very curious, because I know just in larger organizations, I've just been doing a lot of reading about that, but I would love to transition completely. I know there was a $10 million gift that Seton Hall received from the estate of Frank Rubino. We recently had on our sister series on One-on-One, we had on Dean Jonathan Farina talked about it. Can you talk about what this scholarship means and the impact that it's going to have on students?
Absolutely. This is very near and dear to my heart as the person who manages all of the financial aid at the university. I see firsthand what a difference it makes in transforming a student's life to give them the opportunity to complete their degree, to graduate with less debt. So it's really a transformational gift. It's going to help many students, particularly in the STEM field, because the donor was very interested in supporting the STEM fields.
Science, technology, engineering, and math.
That's correct. Yes. Really helping them focus on their studies by not worrying so much about their finances. And the gift is directed to students, you know, who have financial need. And also one of the things that's beautiful about the gift is while it's focusing on science, technology, engineering, and math, It also has a liberal arts component and is focusing on students who want to study abroad in Italy or learn languages in Italian or about Italian culture. These are basically joining the two loves of the donor, Mr. Rubino. So really showing the importance of marrying the liberal arts with the sciences and math. So really a beautiful gift.
Dr. Alyssa McLeod, Senior Enrollment Strategist at our higher ed partner, Seton Hall University. Dr. McLeod, thank you so much. We appreciate your insight.
My pleasure. You take care.
You guys stay with us. We'll be right back.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
The Northward Center has been the heart of NORC since 1970 by putting people, purpose, and mission first, nurturing our youth, uplifting families, and honoring our elders. We're more than a nonprofit. We're a driving force to advance equity, education, and opportunity. And Buddy approved.
All right, folks. I know everyone waits for this. It's a Lessons in Leadership mini-seminar. We're calling this, Mary. I came up with this description. I don't know if you like it. It's called the Jargon-Free Zone. The Jargon-Free Zone. You're asking.
I like it because the acronym for that could be JFZ. It has a good ring to it.
Okay, so that is how we're going to start. First bullet point, no acronyms. First bullet, Sylvester's going to put this, no acronyms. Mary? RFP, what does it mean?
RFP, request for proposals.
Do you think everybody knows that?
Absolutely not. If anything, I'd say maybe 20% of the people that are watching right now would know what RFP means.
Okay, sometimes people use the word STEM, the phrase the STEM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of our previous guests used it and you clarified, and it's always good to use to say what STEM stands for, science, technology, engineering, and math.
Okay, I get that we use use jargon and use acronyms, but here's the second bullet point. Remember, ... your audience doesn't know what you know. Jump on that, Mary.
It's so important, and in very small cases, and even you and I have worked together for 25 years, and I try not to communicate in shorthand or jargon with you because things could be misunderstood, misinterpreted. And more importantly, if you're speaking to a larger group of 5, 10, even 100 people, you cannot assume that your audience understands whatever acronyms you're using. So if you are going to use one because it's something that's common, then you could say, oh, I don't want to, you know, bog you down with TMI. Oh, that's too much information. Sure, that one most people do know. But again, don't assume. And it's just a really good practice to get into.
But now move from acronyms to insider jargon. And the next bullet point will come up, and it's this. No insider jargon. Meaning, remember, we didn't go to medical school with you. We didn't go to law school with you. We didn't train in a technology field connected to AI, artificial intelligence. Here's the issue. Too many of us in leadership positions, including, by the way, Mary, and Elvin knows this, and Frank and Scarlett and others. I remember being on the air and I say, oh, I got my IFB. You mean your earpiece? So the next bullet point after that is speak in everyday, relatable, understandable English. Let's tie the two, Mary.
Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. We often speak as if the people around us are trained in the same field that we are in, understand the same language that we are trained in. And the reality is most people don't know what an IFB use. It's an earpiece. Use the word that the audience, whomever that is likely to understand. Translation, communicate for your audience, not simply for yourself and those who are trained in your field. Easier said than done. Go ahead, Mary.
It's easier said than done, but many of us, some of us, like to use bigger words, longer descriptions, et cetera, to show how smart we are, when instead, if you simplify, dumb it down. It's a horrible way to say it, but
no,
if you
it's
over...
not Mary. You really want to go
not
there?
Dumb it down, but I say that half joking.
Okay.
But if you simplify your communication, you make it easier. Why make someone struggle to try to think, even at, when you use the word IFB, I lost my focus for a minute because my mind is trying to connect. I have no idea what IFB stands for. I know what it is. I know it's the thing that goes in your ear, but now my mind's playing the trick of, wait, I never knew what that stood for,
Hold
right?
On, There's Mary, so you many. You know what else? I don't either.
Exactly. And no, it's so funny.
By the way, Elvin, Frank, does anyone know what IFB? It doesn't even matter.
If you know what it is, put it in the chat. So, but that's my point, Steve. You took me out of my, and I consider myself pretty good at staying present, listening, leaning in, and being curious, especially when we're on the air together. But my mind went over here for about 10 seconds trying to fill in the blanks. You want people to stay connected with you. And the best way to do that, oh, wow. It means interruptible foldback.
Okay.
That doesn't even make any sense.
I've been in this business for over 30 years. I used to have the thing, people say, is your IFB in?
IFB. That doesn't even make any interruptible foldback. We're going to have a whole segment on interactive foldback. So if anyone's
not interactive. It's so ridiculous, we can't even say it. It's interruptible foldback.
Oh.
It's a friggin' earpiece.
It doesn't even make any sense.
I apologize. Seton Hall University is one of our sponsors. I take that back. It is an earpiece.
It's an earpiece.
It's not that other thing. So here's the
All right, get to another tip and tool. I know you have one on that little sheet of yours. No?
Okay, you ready? How about this one? This is one of my favorite books of all time. Oh, by the way, Elvin in the chat is saying, it's a communication system in broadcast or film for a director to give a one-way instruction to an on-air talent, the interruptible part.
Blah, means, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. One of my favorite books of all time. It's going in the Lessons in Leadership Library, top 10. Mm-hmm. You just don't understand. This is from Deborah Tannen, who's a great communication scholar. I studied back in school and at Rutgers in the graduate program there. And she said, stop using words that... It was about communication between men and women, gender communication. Her argument is you just don't understand that men and women also communicate in their own jargon, and it's often gender related. 30 seconds left. You buy it or not, Mary?
I do buy it, and it's a lot more complicated now these days in terms of just, you know, different genders and what you're born with, you know, how you're born, et cetera.
Oh, by the way, she wrote this before...
I understand that. That's why I'm just saying now it's exactly, it's even more complicated now is my point. But I do think it comes down to that human component of everyone communicates differently, whether it's age, whether it's gender, you name it, and everyone communicates differently. And Elvin is communicating very clearly that it's time to say goodbye.
P.S. If Dr. Tannen wanted to do an update on this, it would also include pronouns, the use of pronouns, which can also be confusing to people. We're not making judgments one way or another, but communicate
different.
To be understood. Easier said than done. I'm Steve Adubato. That is Mary Gamba, who communicates in a way that everyone understands. Lessons in Leadership. See you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
The North Ward Center has been the heart of NORC since 1970 by putting people, purpose, and mission first, nurturing our youth, uplifting families, and honoring our elders. We're more than a nonprofit. We're a driving force to advance equity, education, and opportunity. And BUDDY approved.